Phil Mackey, Judd Zolgad.
Is this really as good as it gets? Because it's still not good enough.
Mackey and Judd.
Make us believe again. You don't owe it to yourselves. You owe it to us.
On 1500 ESPN. We're staying in Paris.
Mackey and Judd live at Target Center / Mayo Clinic Square. Skyway. If you're in the downtown area, we do have some donuts left over. Like we're literally
who
giving
do we
away
have?
Timberwolves donuts here.
Who's left in our Taj Gibson donut?
Well, and that's fitting because we're gonna have Taj here very shortly on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like it looks like all the other starting player donuts are gone. Mm-hmm. There was no Tom Thibodeau donut.
There was not.
Where it's just screaming back at you.
Oh, rotate donuts.
So the Wolves and the Jazz tonight at Target Center. Are you going to be there tonight?
I am going to be there. Yes, sir. I am going to be sitting on press row and writing something off this.
What are you? Because I haven't seen the new arena yet. They did a couple media things and like a food tour and different things. But you and I are usually doing our show when that's happening. So
yes,
I think I'm most excited, other than just like seeing the new team in person and seeing how this team works together to try and be relevant in the Western Conference. I'm just curious to see the new Target Center, the renovation. Because if you look around the current state of arenas and stadiums, It's state-of-the-art all over the place. I mean, Target Field is top three in the country for baseball stadiums for my money. The XL Energy Center, after a decade and a half, holds up as one of the best arenas in the country.
Yep.
U.S. Bank Stadium is just ridiculous. You know, And the Target Center, with all those new stadiums and arenas going up, it felt more and more archaic every year. Well, so I'm glad that that we're going to have kind of a new, fresh feel to it.
I'm curious to see what you can do during the game while walking around. That's the biggest difference from 25 years ago, because it used to be you'd show up at the game, you'd go to your seats, and you might go get something, but you'd always come back to your seats. Now you've got bars and clubs, and they're not just all high-end. Those are there, but they're also accessible. And so I'm curious what you can now walk around and sort of see during the game.
Yeah.
And as far as – because you didn't used to want to circulate during games, and now you definitely do.
Yeah, and I think there was a time when if you just had a stadium with seats that people could pay to sit and watch a sporting event, like, that was good enough. But now it's more. Like, now you have to have – you have to have bars and clubs, and you have to have different levels and tiers.
Couples.
So, we'll get into our football picks here in about 10 or 12 minutes with Todd Furman. But he is in his ninth season in the NBA, starting power forward for the Minnesota Timberwolves. Back with Tom Thibodeau again, Taj Gibson. Thank you for joining us this morning, Taj.
Hey, what's up, guys?
So, not much. We're just excited for the home opener here tonight. I'm sure all you guys are as well, but I want to ask you, you're out there jacking up threes now. I want to ask you just your thoughts on the evolution of the NBA, even since you came in the league, and how three-point heavy it is. Did you ever see a time early in your career where expanding out to corner threes would be a big part of your offensive game?
Maybe a couple years ago, but not really. Most of the guys mostly emphasized being able to guard multiple positions, being able to have good footwork in the post, being able to finish around the rim, being athletic. But now you see seven-footers. Basically, everybody on the court has to be able to shoot the ball and guard multiple positions now.
What do you like, Taj, about Tibbs? And if you could give me your best fit for the airwaves Tibbs story, dating back to your days with him as your coach in Chicago?
Well, one thing is, if you work hard, he's going to give you a shot to do what you need to do to play the game of basketball. So if he sees you constantly put the work in, he's one of those coaches that he's going to let you play your game. But it's going to come first from being able to guard your position and playing strong defense. But all I can remember is just being out there in Chicago was constant yelling, constantly getting on you about small details. But I remember I wasn't in the game one time, and he was so used to calling my name, yelling my name, and he thought I was on the court. So he was basically yelling at Carlos, saying, "Taj, get back. Taj, get back." I'm like, "Tibbs, I'm on the bench with you."
I mean, you're both bald, but yeah.
I'm like, "I'm on the bench with you, Tibbs." He said, "Shut up. Sit down. I'm going to get you in a minute." I'm like, "What do you want me to do?"
So, truthfully, Taj, truthfully, How much do players listen to that, especially during the course of a game? Because watching Tibbs coach last year, Taj, I never saw the man sit down. I swear to you, I never saw him sit down. And the verbal barrages didn't end. So when you played for him, how much of that can you actually absorb? And when do you just sort of turn down the hearing aid maybe and say, all right, I can't take any more of this?
I would probably say you got to take like 75% of it serious, the other bit. Like, don't just let it go through one ear out the other, because he just loves the game. You got to realize he really loves the game. Like, he loves every aspect of the game. He's going to challenge the referees. Even if it's a bad shot, he may say, that's a bad shot. When you get back to the huddle, he may turn around, that's a good shot. Keep taking that shot. He's just in the moment kind of guy. Like, he's kind of like a fan at the same time, but a coach at the same time, too. So it's fun to play for sometimes, but you get used to the yelling. You just have to be able to play through it. But after the game, when he's calm, he's like real down to earth and real cool to talk to. So a lot of people don't understand that about him. But you want that from your coach, knowing that every time down, he's challenging the referees. He's making sure they do their job 110%. And he's constantly on them, and I love it.
Taj Gibson is our guest here. Mackie and Judd in the Skyway between Target Center and Mayo Clinic Square. Wolves and Jazz tonight, unveiling the new Target Center. How hard is it to learn if you're a 20, 21, 22-year-old young player in the league, how hard is it to learn how to play quality defense in the NBA, Taj?
It's pretty hard, you know what I'm saying, because the lack of really veterans on most teams nowadays, so you know, a lot of young guys don't really have anybody to really teach them how to really be a pro. A lot of them are just worrying about trying to get to the NBA, but once you get to the NBA, one of the hardest things is just trying to stay in the NBA. It's bigger than just scoring points and shooting threes. You have to be able to guard your position. You just can't just go just worry about offense. You have to be a full, complete player, and you got to be coachable. A lot of guys nowadays aren't really coachable. You have to be able to take whatever the coach tells you and be able to deal with any situation that comes forth, from playing, starting, having less minutes, come off the bench, doing whatever it takes to help your team. You have to be a full, complete player to be in the NBA.
Hey, I asked you about the threes a few minutes ago, but do you like the way the NBA has evolved, or do you feel like we're maybe losing some of that, like the mid-range stuff that was so prominent in the 90s, early 2000s? Do you like the way the NBA has evolved with records of numbers of 3 points being shot?
Yeah, I like it in a way, but I still miss the old way of the grinded out kind of games. Like, you're taking out the big man, you're taking out the physicality of a game. You're looking at a lot of tic-tac fouls and things that back in the day you would look at like that wasn't a foul call, but that's just the evolution. Once the Warriors started winning championships, it's basically like a copycat league, but it all comes down to whoever's winning games and whoever wins championships. Hopefully in the next couple of years we can go back to that, but right now that's the way the game is going.
Yeah. Taj, it was great having you on, and we wish you luck tonight and the rest of the season, man. Thank you for
your
time.
Thanks, brother. Appreciate it, man.
All right. Taj Gibson, right. Ninth year in the NBA, and
that's a great
he's been with Tom
story.
Thibodeau most of it. Yeah, how about that? He's yelling at Carlos Boozer. And
Tibbs, I'm right here. Shut up! I love that.
That's pretty amazing. Let's come back and catch up with our friend Todd Furman from the Bet the Board podcast. He can help us through our Week 7 NFL picks, including Vikings and Ravens. Mackie and Judd, downtown Minneapolis.
The Mackie and Judd Show rolls on.
It's about damn time.
This is 1500 ESPN. Putting fake money where their big mouths are.
Money talks, then a game that I pick. Believe me, it's a winner. What I know could get you rich, because all I pick is winners. Money talks. Money talks.
Mackie and Judd are picking games for this weekend against the spread. Are they pros or Joes? Let's find out.
All right, Judd, are you properly prepped for this segment?
No, I'm not prepped at all, because you sent me this list this morning after saying, oh, I guess I sent it to Harrigan last night only. No, I'm not properly prepped.
We're sabotaging you on purpose
at
during this show.
At every turn.
Hey, Todd Furman from the Bet the Board podcast. We had an entertaining Thursday night game last night for the first time in the NFL's history. Congratulations, NFL.
You know what? Thursday night games have been a lot better this year than even Sunday night football. You look at New England and Tampa came down to the final series, the Rams and 49ers. came down to the tail end. But I can tell you, we may watch football the rest of the season, gentlemen, but we won't have three consecutive flags thrown inside the 10-yard line that will have an impact on the outcome with no time left on the clock.
That was absolutely maddening, though. It was hilarious because you kept saying, well, that is a penalty, but, and then you said, and what we went from a PI on Oakland on the initial Crabtree catch, right, to two holding calls against the Chiefs. It was, you kept saying to yourself, this can't really be happening for a third time.
Well, the thing about it, I'm a hockey fan, so I'm a big believer when you're talking about playoff games and late in the third period, you kind of swallow your whistle. I know it's not the best mentality to have, but when you look at the first offensive pass interference, Crabtree, all right, that could have gone either way. The two holds probably could have gone either way from Kansas City. And then, you know, what's the difference between Crabtree pushing off to catch the actual touchdown pass at the end? But either way, definitely entertaining. It salvages Oakland's season at least for a week. But I think the Raiders still have a number of questions and issues that they're going to have to sort out.
Yep. It's the NFL is it's fun. It's wildly unpredictable this season. Let's get right into our five games because I know that Todd has a lot of things on his plate, and so do we this morning live at Target Center. So let's dive right into these five games. We'll end with Vikings and Ravens. Rams, this is a game that's being played across the pond. The Rams are 3.5-point favorites over the Cardinals. And I know Judd usually brings a bunch of research to the table.
I can't have any today.
I brought some research to the table as well here. It's all about travel this week, gentlemen. It's all about travel. It is 200 extra miles from Los Angeles to the London area than it is from the Phoenix to London area. Therefore, the Cardinals will be more well-rested, and they will cover the spread against the Rams. Judd?
I am... So they're going to... Oh, boy.
It's 5,500 miles...
Hey, just quickly, Furman.
...from Los Angeles and 5,200
right.
miles
hey,
from Phoenix.
Furman, very quickly, I've been doing well because my research has been impeccable. Mackie elected to leave me out because he picked the games. He elected to send only Dave the games to pick last night, and this morning said, oh, I guess I forgot to send them to you. So I'm seeing them for, like, the first time. I got them, like, an hour ago. So I'm flying blind
here. I feel like there should be an asterisk by this week's games results.
Yes!
You've had an hour and a half.
There's been no kitchen table prep. There's been no real research.
By the way, the standings, I forgot the standings. I went 4-1 last week, 18-11-1. You went 3-2, 17-12-1. Game behind there, and Dave went 4-1, almost back to 500,
right.
14-15-1.
Long story short, I'm on a short leash here. I'm panicked about my picks. I am going to take the Cardinals too, then.
Make Dave? It three of us, yeah. I don't think the 3.5 is just a slight tick too much for me.
Cardinals have received professional money, but Mackie, I'm going to throw a little bit of water on your travel scenario since the Rams didn't return to the West Coast after playing Jacksonville over the weekend. So their flight, they've actually saved about 2,000 miles.
But they've been
Arizona,
away from their pets and families, Todd.
One other tidbit I'm going to add and why it relates to the Vikings as well. Adrian Peterson will become the first player in NFL history to play not one, but two games in London in the same season. So file that away for a trivia question that nobody will probably ever ask.
Play in air quotes regarding the first time he was in London.
Can I get the odds on him suffering a sprained MCL on Sunday?
I do not have any odds on lower body injuries at this point, but I'm sure we can try and brainstorm a few should that be the desired path you want to go down.
All right. Seattle is a 4.5-point road favorite over the New York Football Giants. This is the hardest game on the platter for me this week. My first instinct was, man, like everyone's down on the Giants. They did win a game last week. I'm going to go with my gut here, though, or I guess with my against my gut and say that Seattle just feels like the better overall team, ready to accelerate, coming off a bye and two straight wins. So that's a lot of time to prepare for a pretty bad offense. I'm going to go Seattle to win by more than 4.5, but I don't feel good about it. Judd?
I got burned by the Giants last week because they were in disarray and went into Denver, and of course they not only didn't get destroyed, they won that game. But I do think that the Giants, having a bad season as they are now going to rebound and be the Giants again that we saw early in the season. So I'm going to agree with you and go Seattle.
Yeah, Giants still might suck. We don't know. But Seattle sucks on the road. Traveling across the country, no, give me the Giants.
The market has bought into the Giants, despite the fact the Giants were actually outgained by 170 yards in that win against the Broncos. It was more Trevor Siemian's ineptitude that contributed to the Giants winning comfortably 23-10 as 14-point dogs. You mentioned Seattle coming in off the bye. This number, had the game been played last weekend, gentlemen, would have been 7, trending closer to 4. I think you're actually going to see some professional support from the on the road favored Seahawks as this game, if the number were to get any lower. Surprised to see the public now all of a sudden wants to get on the Giants bandwagon when last weekend books couldn't buy a ticket on them.
Interesting there. Philadelphia at home as a 4.5-point favorite over Washington. And I don't know. I'm still in prove-it mode with the Eagles. I do think the Eagles are absolutely going to win that division. But I'm still in prove-it mode a little bit here against a tough Washington offense. So if I'm going to get Kirk Cousins in a division game and I'm getting more than a field goal here, I'm going to take Washington. I'm going to take the points here.
Philadelphia at home. I'm convincing myself more and more that Philly is becoming this year's version of the 2016 Cowboys. I am going to go with the home team, Philadelphia, and give those points.
Yeah, this is the one game I hate because I really have no feel. I just think Philly's the better team, and they're at home. So 4.5 doesn't scare me, even though maybe it should. Give me the Eagles.
A little bit of professional money coming in here on a slow trickle with the Washington Redskins. Revenge from the week one loss they suffered at the hands of these, of course, same Philadelphia Eagles. Ronald Darby, status improving, but don't expect him to be out there in the Philadelphia secondary. Should give Washington opportunities to play a little pitch and catch over the top. You look at the Redskins, it's been their defense. It's been the quiet surprise so far this year. Much different role for them this week, catching points, especially over a field goal, than where they were last week, laying 11 against the 49ers. I think the Redskins keep this game competitive and can slide inside that 4.5-point tag.
A couple games left here. Vikings and Ravens coming up very shortly. But New England at home, this is a very interesting game. New England at home as a 3.5-point favorite over Atlanta here. I know that New England's defense, bulk of the season, has been atrocious, and they've allowed more pass yards and yards per play than any other defense. It feels like they may have, I don't know, I don't really have anything scientific. I'm going to pick the Patriots. I'm sorry. My gut says the Patriots aren't going to be that bad the rest of the season. So, I'm going to pick the Patriots. I'll keep it short.
I'm going to agree with you, Phil, because I am losing faith in the Falcons. I remained on the bandwagon even though I didn't think they were playing great earlier in the season. And that was proving maybe to be a mistake. So I will go New England at home and give those points as well.
An opportunity for me to pick one up. I'm going to go with the Falcons. Seems like it's a good time to buy low on Atlanta against a team that's already lost twice at home this year, boys. Give me the Falcons.
Professionals have gravitated towards the Falcons in this particular spot, taking the 4.5, driving this number down to a field goal. You mentioned some of the trials and tribulations that New England has suffered on the defensive side of the ball. Revenge on the minds of the Falcons. You just worry if Atlanta can actually close out a game since they've squandered late opportunities lately against the Bills and Dolphins. But this is very real professional money that's taken this number from 4.5 down to a field goal.
Very interesting. All right, Minnesota at home, 4-2. The landscape has changed quite a bit since the last time we had Todd on a week ago, with Aaron Rodgers now out for the season, basically. So Vikings in the driver's seat in the division, 4-2 record, 5.5-point favorites at U.S. Bank Stadium over Baltimore. I think the Vikings win, but 5.5 is too many in my mind. I'm going to play the odds here. I think Baltimore is much more likely to keep this close and or win the game. There's a chance they win the game, a 30 or 40% chance they win. So it is still Case Keenum. He's not Tom Brady, and we're talking almost a touchdown here. And so I'm going to take Baltimore in the points.
The spread is a little bit too high for me, but that being said, I'm going to take the Vikings based on this solely. Joe Flacco, 8 picks. Vikings, 7 picks by their defense. The Minnesota Vikings will turn turnovers on defense into points against Flacco and the Ravens, and will cover this spread via the fact that their defense will score them some points. I am going Vikings, David.
I'm not going to bet on the defense scoring points. I am going to agree with Phil that the Vikings probably win, but I don't think they score enough points to really make this a blowout. 5.5 is too much for me. Give me the Ravens to cover it.
Big price tag here for the Vikings when you consider this total has been bet down to 38. You look at Minnesota, the emotional win last weekend that you guys had against the Green Bay Packers. Baltimore, a little bit licking their wounds, so to speak, after losing at home to the Chicago Bears. Well, you have to be skeptical of where the Ravens will go for points on offense, given what we've seen from them. Baltimore has attracted a little bit of money here just for the reasons you guys outlined, thinking it could be a lower scoring game, making the 5.5-6 much more valuable than it would be in a shootout.
Right on. Real quick, last question for you here, Todd, on the Vikings. So, their quarterback has been in question. When you look at the rest of the Vikings roster, if you put like an actual top caliber quarterback with this roster, would they be one of the three or four best teams in the NFL? Like, would you call that a Super Bowl, potential Super Bowl winning team?
I think they definitely have to be considered, and that also takes into consideration the running back position. You'd much rather have Dalvin Cook out there, despite Jerick McKinnon having done an excellent job filling in, at least for the short term. But talent-wise, on the defensive side, I definitely think that a lot of people love what they see from the Vikings week in, week out. A little bit, you still have some skepticism on the back end. I don't think the secondary is as good as what we've seen in the past. But when you look at the muddled playoff picture that is the NFC right now, with the Packers' odds dropping to 30-1, there's a reason that the Vikings become one of the primary beneficiaries. They're right now listed at 16-1 to win the Super Bowl, the shortest odds they've had all of 2017.
Right on. Great stuff. Todd Furman from the Bet the Board podcast. What can people find? What do you want to direct them to real quick here, Todd?
They can always check out Bet the Board podcast every Monday and Thursday for all things NFL. We break down a lot of the biggest games with deeper dives than we have a chance to do here on this fine segment. And I know we don't do a lot of college football with you guys on Fridays, but I'm sure there are folks in the Twin Cities looking to get their Saturday investments right. We offered up one of our strongest best bets for a game on the West Coast. Come Saturday afternoon as we talk about the eight biggest games, including USC, Notre Dame, and, of course, the Big Ten clash between Penn State and Michigan.
Right on. Good stuff, man.
Thanks,
see you next
Furman.
Week.
See ya.
Always a pleasure, guys.
Bye.
All right, Todd Furman from the Bet the Board podcast. You find him sporadically, Fox Sports 1, CBS
asterisk.
Sports Network.
I get an asterisk if I don't do well this week. It was a late. I got my picks in late. I had to panic to make them. I'm definitely getting an asterisk.
Dave, Judd always calls you the most high maintenance, whiny producer in the Twin Cities.
No, today I'm being high maintenance because
I'm being picked on. Is there anyone more whiny
and
excuse laden than you?
I'm the elder statesman of the show. You'd think there'd be some level of respect, and there's none whatsoever.
I'm going to do something I never thought I'd do. I almost side with Judd here.
Wow.
Thank you.
I know. Well, it's not
an
easy.
An hour and a half. What do you put 3 hours of prep into your picks?
The kitchen table research is out the window.
The thing about
if anyone's putting 3 hours of prep into their picks, the results certainly aren't indicating that it's warranted the last 3 years.
When the KTR is impacted like it was this week, I don't have a chance. My KTR, kitchen table research, is off the charts.
You guys know that I'm the oldest young man in the history of the world. I know old people, meaning I know Judd. And you get anybody who's a little up in age off their normal routine, I feel for them, guys.
Get off my lawn.
I feel for you, Judd.
Everyone get off my lawn.
Get him some prune juice during this commercial break.
Everyone get off my lawn.
Mackie and Judd.
Where's my nurse?
You know, you brought up some points about Joe Flacco, and Joe Flacco was the central focus of the Judd's Key segment earlier. Let's talk more Vikings and Joe Flacco. Is he to be feared at all? Like, are we underestimating the shell of Joe Flacco? We're just thinking that he's going to come in here and throw five interceptions. Mackie and Judd live at Target Center. And we'll talk about the Target Center renovations with Ted Johnson later on, too, the chief strategy officer of the Wolves. What can you expect walking into Target Center as a fan? And it's a game show Friday, so stick around. Mackie and Judd till 1 downtown Minneapolis.
Mackie and Judd are back on 1500 ESPN.
This portion of Mackie and Judd live from the Skyways at Target Center Mayo Clinic Square is brought to you by Fratelloni's Ace Hardware and Garden Stores, proud sponsor of The Beer Show. Boys.
Thank you, Dave Harrigan. We're going to talk Target Center renovations and what you can expect as a fan if you're coming for the first time to see the new arena. Not the new arena, I guess, but like the renovated arena.
Remodeled arena.
Remodeled arena, yes. The Vikings are playing Joe Flacco on Sunday. And I just want to throw a couple things at you here. You know the Ravens have paid Joe Flacco $165 million guaranteed dollars to play quarterback for them over the past 9 years or so? Basically just to ride Hall of Fame caliber defenses, except for that one really hot stretch where he threw 11 touchdowns in the postseason a few years ago, and they won a Super Bowl.
Yep, 11 touchdowns and no picks, and he was unbelievable in that postseason.
Like, he fascinates me because he's one of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL this year. At his best, outside of the January hot streak, where, again, he was backed by Ray Lewis and Ed Reed, and it helps when you have that kind of a defense. Has he ever been anything other than, like, an average regular season quarterback? They're going to wind up paying him more than almost any other quarterback in history. to be this. And I'm kind of fascinated by that.
But this is a guy who's had enough success to where I think you're satisfied with it up until now. Now, I will give you his excuse for this year. He missed all of training camp with a disc injury in his back. He then returned to start the season. They felt, obviously, compelled that they had to start him. They feel compelled that they've had to continue to play him. My guess is his back is a complete mess. Because he has been, at times this year, and far too many times, off the charts just bad. Do I think that this is Flacco? No. Do I think that this is a guy that they feel that they have to play? Absolutely. But his story previous to this is interesting because it just goes to show you what the acceptance of quarterbacks can be. Hey, he's not bad. Hey, he had a great playoff. That's good enough.
Yeah.
And you're so, I think teams are so scared because what happens is if they say to themselves, okay, Joe Flacco's been good for us, but let's move on. Okay. Now the question is, where do you move? And if you're a GM,
well,
and you're
anywhere for something other than $20 million, which they owe him,
right? But
they owe him like 40 or 50 more million in the next 2 years.
But if you're a GM and you move on and you're wrong about it, it's much more likely to cost you your job than Joe Flacco.
See,
and Joe Flacco, I'm just telling you,
I disagree with that.
He's hurt right now. He's got a bad back.
Here's what's, and now I guess you're right in that John Harbaugh hasn't lost his job. So like, so attaching yourself to Joe Flacco or just like having a 5 year grace period from winning a Super Bowl is what keeps him employed. They've missed the playoffs multiple years in a row. They've had Hall of Famers up and down their defense for the entirety of Joe Flacco's career. Not quite the same defense as the last 2 or 3 years, but, you know, those were incredible defenses for a long time. And so I guess I would argue that you could have almost any competent starter. Like a Trevor Siemian could have been their quarterback, and they would still probably have won at least one Super Bowl over that stretch. And so why feel the pressure to give a guy who's decidedly mediocre and average $20-plus million a year in a salary cap league is so dumb to me.
But it's very simple. It's because they saw what he did in that playoff run, and they said this was so good that we feel compelled to reward him based on this, and if he can do this again in the playoffs. That's why they do
like,
it.
Like, would another team have given him that much money? I guess.
But,
and if,
but the
if that happens, I say, all right,
but the
thanks for the ring.
The conversation that we're having here and we've had before, to me, goes back to the question of finding quarterbacks and how hard that is for teams and what they identify as acceptable. And they look around the league, and teams look around the league, and they see the guys who are busting, and they say, oh, my God, what if we're wrong about our next choice? So the choice to replace Flacco, it could be an upgrade. It could be somebody who's very solid. But it also could be a draft pick who busts. And if that's the case, that's how head coaches and GMs get fired. I think that when it comes to quarterback play, it's the most interesting discussion that you could possibly have because it's seen differently by everybody, but everybody knows that if they're wrong about it, it can cost you a job.
Yeah, I think the way I think about it, and I don't disagree with anything you just said. I just disagree with the way the GMs handle quarterbacks. Like, there's too much of a black and white zone, and sometimes you should just draw a line if you know a guy's not a top quarterback. But for as much as we rag on Ted Thompson and the Packers for having Aaron Rodgers for like a decade and only having one Super Bowl championship and mostly fading out before you get to the Super Bowl, couldn't you flip that around on the Ravens and say, man, you guys for like 20 years have had, that's a 20-year stretch of defensive play that I don't know if you can match at any other point in the NFL's history. Like, there's the 8-year run of the Pittsburgh defenses in the 70s. Couldn't you say, over 20 years, and you really had Joe Flacco and Trent Dilfer and Kyle Bowler as the quarterbacks? Like, it's the same thing reversed.
Mm-hmm.
You look at Green Bay and say, man, like, you had Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers for 25
years. It's Denver right
now.
I mean, Denver.
Yeah.
Denver.
But they had Peyton Manning for
sure,
a while.
But
so.
But right now, if you look at the Broncos.
It would
Broncos,
be like if the Broncos did this for 15 more years and they couldn't find anyone other than Trevor Siemian
to be
their quarterback.
And I think there's a legitimate question to be asked of the Broncos, which is, with this good a defense, do you really just want to try and get by? Because that's what they're doing. And Elway, you would figure, of all people, could go out and, I'm not even saying he's got to have a great quarterback, but a good one. But it's so hard to find guys.
He wound up with Osweiler anyways.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Who's
that's
what?
The genius. Like,
who's backup
actually,
there?
Actually, we'll have the Browns and the Texans pay your money,
yeah.
And then we'll just get you back in a year when you flame out. You can be our backup again. Great.
But you look at this Denver defense right now, and I think you say to yourself, if you put a good quarterback with this team, this would be a really good team. And yet you go into every game and say, I wonder if Simeon can do it this week. And you don't know.
No. But I say that now. I mean, I say that about the Ravens. I mean, their defense this year is not the Ed Reed, Ray Lewis defenses, but it's pretty good defense. The Vikings aren't. There's a reason why the over-under is 38 points in this game.
If the
this ain't going to be a 30-point Viking outburst, most likely.
This year, if the Ravens are guilty of one thing, I think it's paying a lot to an injured quarterback who they then insist has to play. Mm. When a guy has a back problem at Flacco's age, that's a lot to ask for him to play.
Matt Sheeta chimes in. I could be completely wrong, but weren't you saying Flacco was a top 5 to 10 quarterback back when he signed this contract? Honestly, like, if you can find that tweet or segment, unless I blacked out.
With Royce?
There's no way.
Does that go back to the Patrick
show? If you can find it, Matt, we will publicly humiliate me in the Skyway and shame me. If you can find, just like, I don't know, do a Google search. Phil Mackey, Flacco.
Right.
We'll see.
Here's my question for you. Do the Giants have the guts and the ability and the confidence to move on from Eli after this year, assuming that they continue to be a pretty bad team and get a high draft pick? Because they probably should look at it.
I don't think. Yeah,
I don't really do it.
It would take a lot more guts for the Ravens to move off $50 million more to the cap to Joe Flacco at 32 years old than 37-year-old Eli Manning with 1 year left before you can pretty safely get out from underneath the contract. Let's take a break here and come back. We're going to get an inside glimpse here, at least in audio form, at the Target Center renovations.
Theater of the mind is what we call it in the business.
When it comes to the renovations. Did you have something? Oh, I thought you gave me a signal.
No, sir.
No, it's okay.
Nope, I was going to look at
something. All right, we're going to come back. Judd's just going to creep on Twitter. We're going to come back. Mackey and Judd live at Target Center and Mayo Clinic Square.
Phil Mackey, Judd Zolgad.
I would like to think that they're good. You know, hopefully it'll continue to get better.
Mackey and Judd on 1500 ESPN.
1500 ESPN is a proud sponsor of Highland Friendship Club's 11th annual Lanes for Friendship featuring Minnesota twin Joe Mauer. This year's event's taking place Saturday, November 4th at Bolero in Lakeville. Saturday Sports Talk will be there live to kick it off with a broadcast 10 to noon. For more info and to register, head to 1500ESPN.com. Keyword events, boys.
All right, we were hoping to be joined by the Chief Strategy Officer of the Timberwolves here, Ted Johnson, to go behind the curtain. We're working on that. He's been bouncing all over the place, so he's either going to join us this segment or sometime here shortly, and it's going to be valuable because he'll be able to tell us what we need to know about the renovations, and if you're a fan coming to the game tonight or any other future home game here, what you need to know and what you can explore.
I would say the most important addition to the in-arena experience, however, was made during the course of last year, wouldn't you? The scoreboard. That this old scoreboard, by the time that was done, because the X had upgraded and the Vikings had their stadium, by the time they took out the old scoreboard, it looked like old school box TV to me. I mean, it might as well have been black and white.
Yeah, it was. It's amazing how quickly stadiums and arenas just become old. Remember when the Metrodome was built in the early 80s?
Yep.
And they had at the time, I remember going to my first games, like, you know, in the early 90s. So, and those were legit jumbotrons on the ends of the Metrodome. They were called jumbotrons. They felt huge. You know, you'd go up there and you'd stand on the bottom of it, you know, the top row of the upper deck, and it would just feel. And now you fast forward just maybe 10 years when everyone has an HD TV in their home and new stadiums are being built. How quickly those jumbotrons became microscopic. And the same is true in these arenas with these overhead scoreboards. Williams Arena, they redid that one too. Remember, like, that was like a grainy old 1980s sort of graphic thing.
You couldn't see it.
Yeah.
Like, you'd watch something and you'd be like, is that the play I just saw?
Yes.
The Metrodome, when it opened in 82, they actually only had the big scoreboard in left field. And as I recall, it was black and white. And until the Super Bowl was there in what would have been, January of 92? Is that correct? They did not have the scoreboard on the first base side. So if you sat on, so if you were in left field, you couldn't watch replays.
Yeah.
And it took them until the Super Bowl was there 10 years after the fact to put that in. So
that's interesting. So so you couldn't, you didn't know like what was going on unless you sat on one side of
absolutely.
The field then.
Yes. If there was a play that they were replaying and you were in the left field stands, you couldn't see it.
That's pretty amazing.
Not unless you were down low enough and turned around to watch it.
Yeah, Ted, come on. You want to come on right now? Yeah, grab a headset.
Grab a headset, yeah.
Ted Johnson, the chief strategy officer of the Minnesota Timberwolves. Exciting day running around. You guys have hit the reset button on the uniforms, the roster, the arena, like
everything.
And it's amazing. We had you on our show from the Fishbowl broadcast booth like a month ago, and just to
right.
see even in the last month the progress. So what do fans need to know first and foremost about the arena? Let's start there.
Yeah, well, you know, I think fans are going to be I think they're going to be pleasantly surprised. I mean, from the time they walk in the door until the time they leave, they should have a fundamental sort of new experience in Target Center. Everything from coming in the main lobby that's now been open. I think last time we talked, we didn't have the lobby open. The Skyway's now been opened. We have this beautiful atrium on the lower concourse. We've built out a beer deck on the south end of the building. So anyone
awesome.
You know that has a ticket can go buy a beer and watch the game from the overlook. The bathrooms have been done. We've really touched, boy, just about every square inch of the place.
How important has it been to turn the fan experience, Ted, into the ability to wander? Because when we were kids, you went to a game, you had a ticket, you might have gotten something to eat, and you went to your seat and sat there.
Right.
And, like, we didn't even think about, you know what I'd like to do? I'd like to get up and go to the beer garden, and then I'd like to wander around the arena. But that's changed completely now. How important has it been to give the consumer the ability that if they want to sit in their seat, that's fine, but if they want to experience the entire building, they also can do that?
No, you're right. You know, we're people of short attention spans, right?
What's that?
We're
oh, yeah.
I was a little slow on the uptake there. No, you're absolutely right. I mean, the experience of coming down to a game, given the cost, given the sort of competition we have for people's time, it's important that people come down for an experience. And I would say Timberwolves games, more so than most sporting events, have always been about coming downtown, going out for dinner, going out for drinks afterwards. It's been much more about sort of bright lights, big city, sort of a night out. So providing all those types of experiences and amenities in the arena has become really important to our business. And I would also say that when Target Center was built back in 1989, the only other facility in town was the Metrodome.
Yeah.
And so people's expectations were a little bit different. But, you know, some of this is driven by virtue of the fact that we've built some incredible other facilities in town, which are great for the sports fans, right? I mean, you have a beautiful ballpark next door. You have U.S. Bank. You've got TCF Bank. You have all these beautiful places to go. And so fans' expectations have changed over time. They want to come down to a place. Yes, they want a place where they can get that cheap hot dog, but they also want a place where they can sort of get that really great parlor burger or something that's really sort of special. Because for a lot of our fans coming down to a game, it's a special night out.
What are for your money or for your food taste? What are your like rank your top three new food items that people can find starting tonight?
Boy, you know, I'm a huge fan of David Fima's chicken tulips. Always have been. Loved him when he had Fima's restaurant. Parlor burger.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That might be the
it.
Best burger in Minneapolis. Honestly.
I think it's a crack burger. I mean, it is unbelievable. I mean,
like, you line up four of them and it's like one bite. You pound. Yeah, it's
incredible.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm. Incredible. So, you know, those would be two on the top of my list. Depending on the night, of course, the soda roll, which is sort of an interesting thing, right? It's a sushi burrito. But you have to be in the right mood for it.
Okay.
That's another
thing.
Is it
like a burrito sized or sushi sized?
No, it's like a, well, it's rolled like a burrito, so you don't need chopsticks and everything
okay.
else.
Yep.
But it's larger than a sushi roll.
Yeah.
But it's smaller than a Chipotle burrito.
Okay.
Somewhere in between.
Okay. Nice. I'd be in on that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Year 13 for you? Year 14? You've been
this
here quite...
This is my 15th season.
Okay. So you've seen small reboots, bigger ones, not this big, but you've been through a lot, including a lot of down years.
Yeah.
Why is this different this time? Because, I mean, there has been...
Yeah.
There's been expectations before. Not like this, I don't think. But why is this different?
Yeah, you know, Judd, I go back to my very first season, the 03-04 season. So I came in that summer before the big run, and that was the summer we acquired Candyman and Cassell and Sprewell.
Yeah.
I would say that that really is the last time that there's been this level of expectation and excitement around the team. You're right. We've done a lot of reboots. We've brought in a lot of players, coaching changes. But when you look at what was added in the offseason as far as proven quality of players, I just think it's changed people's expectations. And for us as a business, we sat down years ago with sort of a strategic plan of rebranding and redoing the arena and building a training center and buying up a G League team. You know, those were things from a business side that we could plot out, we could plan, we could put on a 3-year trajectory, be very strategic in how we went about building the, you know, building blocks of the franchise. And it was always our hope that when all these pieces began to come together, that we could marry it up with something that, that would be gelling on the court. And so, you know, we find ourselves in this really, I think, envious position where we have, you know, a new logo, new uniforms, new courts, a new building, a new training center, a new development team, and we've got this product on the court that we hope will develop because we've got some really exciting players.
Yeah, real quick, we have like 30 seconds left, but if Flip Saunders were to, you know, walk in, what would Flip think of all of this from the roster, the uniforms, everything that he kind of envisioned a lot of this a number of years ago?
Flip would love it. I mean, Flip was a showman. We all know Flip,
right? Sure.
I mean, he was an amateur magician, a showman, a marketer. He loved it. He would be so thrilled, so excited, and not only what it would mean for the team, but you know, Flip loved this community. He would have been just as excited by what this all meant for the fans. He loved to engage the fans like few other coaches I've seen, and
yeah.
And I'm sure he's up there somewhere doing a little dance and giving us a round of applause.
Right on. Ted Johnson, hey, thank you for coming over, man.
Appreciate sure thing.
It. Looking
thank
forward
you guys.
To it.
Thank
Wolves
you.
And Jazz tonight. You can see the new arena, new uniforms, Jimmy Butler, et cetera. And if you're in the downtown area, Mackie and Joe, we're hanging out for another hour in the Skyway. So if you're wandering by for lunch, yes, these are our ugly made-for-radio faces. So